morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. A lot of motorsports this weekend. Right now, the Formula One race from Monaco is actually running. Well, I'm actually recording my show earlier, so the race is over. And hopefully, I'll be done with my show and be able to give you those results. If not, I'll have those for you next weekend. We'll talk about IndyCar and NASCAR. Also, a couple things regarding Kyle Busch, his passing, and his last conversation with Dale Earnhardt Jr. What's going on with classic cars and a threat to their long-term viability, and an article about a Cybertruck and what's happening with those. Of course, we'll talk about gas prices, and of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. We certainly see quite a few of these around Metro Phoenix, and I still think it's a very unique design. It looks like something I actually would have drawn when I was about 10 years old, and that's the Tesla Cybertruck. And the headline reads, the Tesla Cybertruck buyers who paid $150,000 face a brutal price collapse on this vehicle. Well, the pricing plunge when the Tesla Cybertruck finally hit the streets in late 2023. Early adapters, well, they were willing to pay astronomical premiums to get behind the wheel of one of these vehicles. Well, as one of our local buyers and sellers, Doug Demetro, points out in his latest video, the initial Foundation Series models carries a sticker of around $100,000. Now, crazed buyers quickly flipped these stainless steel beasts on auction sites like Bring a Trailer and Cars and Amps, bidding for nearly upwards of $150,000 for some of those early Cybertrucks. Today, well, the landscape looks dramatically different. Still a capable truck, along with some inherent issues that have mildly made it finally maybe a decent value in the marketplace. Well, that steep depreciation curve has left many of those early buyers underwater. Note the fact that early trucks are now selling for $58,000 to $70,000 on the secondary market. The reason for this massive drop? Well, it's multifaceted. The broader electric vehicle market has lost some of that initial shine due to the challenging political climates and the removal of those lucrative incentives. Furthermore, the Cybertruck is no longer the exclusive unicorn it was. Automakers inevitably had lower transaction prices to meet waning demand, forcing used car prices to go down in tandem with that. And the Musk factor and the overproduction, a significant factor pushing values down, and the polarization of the Tesla brand itself. Candidly, marks that Elon Musk and his political alignments have alienated a portion of the traditional EV base, and the reputational damage is now compounding with a severe overproduction issue. Tesla manufactured more trucks than the retail market could comfortably absorb. In fact, the 2025 Cybertruck sales fell off faster than any other EV, plummeting 48% as compared to 2024. Now, offload excessive inventory, Tesla even sold a substantial chunk of these vehicles to other Musk-owned companies when fleet vehicles eventually hit the used car market. They flooded the market and drug down prices even more. That inventory buildup forced Tesla to look overseas for willing buyers. A recent report showed that Tesla is taking the Cybertrucks to the Middle East after a severe slump in the U.S. to find some fresh demand. Now, despite this gloomy outlook, they also reassure that the current buyers will not have a drop to an absolutely zero value. Its raw performance, its off-road capability, general decently utility pickup truck, the lowdown, well, where's the bottom? If you're holding on to a Cybertruck as an investment, the immediate future looks bleak. He predicts that prices will continue to slide all the way down to the $30,000 range in the next 18 months. Look even further down the road, the bottom of the depreciation curve could land somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000 in about 7 to 10 years. We've already seen similar depreciation trajectories with the flagship Model S Tesla. What it's also important to bring to an editorial crossroad is too soon to call the Cybertruck a colossal failure, but the massive depreciation have sales certainly point to it's not looking good. All right. When Tesla's Cybertruck finally hit the market in 2023, early adapters were willing to pay that astronomical price. And that's what we're talking about with the Foundation Series. That steep depreciation curve left many buyers underwater, and that secondary market, as we talked about, is now between $50,000 and $75,000. We talked about the Musk factor and certainly the overproduction of this vehicle. We'll see if these vehicles do have a place in the Middle East. We'll see that hopefully there's a new market for these vehicles. But at this point in time, the Tesla Cybertruck is looking like maybe it wasn't the best value in a electric. Place where I usually find articles in People magazine, but this one did catch my eye. Headline reads, Dale Earnhardt Jr. reveals final texts he sent to Kyle Busch the day before the racing legend's passing. Years after the famous rivalry, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Kyle Busch were making plans to gear up together on the racetrack. In the latest edition of his Dirty Mo Media podcast, on Tuesday, May 26th, Earnhardt shared details of their final text with one another just hours before Busch died on Thursday at age 41. I was texting with him the day before he passed away about getting together this Thursday to bring his seat for his late model over to my shop, Earnhardt said. He continued, because we had agreed that he was going to race our car in the Cars Tour series. Now, Earnhardt revealed that Busch had big plans for their collaboration, and the idea would have blown the fans' minds. As he goes, I want to run the Dale Jr. 8. You know, like he said, you got it. We'll run the Dale Jr. 8. Earnhardt also added, he gave me one of those head-exploding emojis. That's what the race fans are going to think. Well, last week, the third-generation driver shared a heartfelt moment to Busch, who died from severe pneumonia that progressed into sepsis, and expanding his relationship with the NASCAR star. Kyle and I had a really challenging existence for many years, Earnhardt wrote on X on Thursday the 21st, but luckily we got time to figure out our differences. You know, something initiated a conversation in his bus about each one of us, how we managed our race teams. I was super eager for us to get on better terms, but it was he who made the effort to make that possible, Earnhardt added. We did some media together to laugh through some of the things that we put each other through many, many years ago. The driver's animosity toward one another dates back to nearly 20 years ago when Busch left Kendricks Motorsports and Earnhardt drove that car, which one took center stage in the sport. On Sunday, May 24th, Kyle's wife Samantha Busch and their children Brexton 11 and Lennox 4 made an emotional appearance at the Coca-Cola 600 alongside his parents. This was Kyle Busch's home. Every racetrack was Kyle Busch's home. That was according to Steve O'Donnell, who was making a tribute to the two-time NASCAR Series champion. He competed the way he wanted to prove every single race that he was the best. So very interesting to hear this conversation that was happening between Dale Earnhardt Jr. as well as what was going on with he and Kyle Busch. The fact that Kyle was going to race for his Cars Tour team, which is a smaller tour underneath NASCAR, running at smaller tracks around the country. So kind of cool to see that these two guys that had a lot of animosity toward each other and were huge competitors finally were able to kind of break that down, and they were going to work together, and boy, that would have been fun to see. On the pages of Autoblog, this is talking about classic cars, something near and dear to my heart. Well, the real threat to classic cars might not be EVs, but it's going to be the heirs who get them. Boomers are expected to pass down millions of classic cars over the next 15 years, but some of their heirs might not be ready. Well, electric cars have dramatically changed the automotive landscape, prompting several legacy brands to introduce models that would have been unthinkable decades ago, such as the Ford Mustang Mach-E. As a part of that shift comes from the policies of requiring newer vehicles to produce fewer emissions, eventually targeting zero emissions altogether. Well, that raises into question the future of classic cars and what's going to happen to those when their more modern vehicles are coming online. Well, according to Scoops, citing Hagerty, said that right now there are more than 43 million collector cars in the U.S., with approximately 12 million of those valued at around $570 billion collectively, expected to be passed on from one generation to the next over the next 15 years. As a part of the great wealth transfer, it might seem that EVs supporting policies would kill these classics, but a report noted that other factors might make them less appealing, including the maintenance costs. Well, nostalgia, that comes with bills. With parts becoming harder and harder to source, certain classic cars are requiring specialized mechanics. It's not hard to imagine why maintenance can be costly and tiring. Some owners could also spend heavily on storage to keep these cars in tip-top shape, and that can be crucial if they plan to sell them later. The report, citing Bloomberg, said one anonymous owner of a 1965 Studebaker spent more than $40,000 for storage costs and maintenance costs. Now, there's a human side to these inherited classic cars. Some heirs see them less as prized possessions, as more as responsibilities, or in some situations, even a burden. At the same time, classic cars carry a major sentimental value, which can complicate the inheritance matter or even lead to family disputes when the ownership plans are not clearly laid out. Although not mentioned in this report, shifting preferences could also threaten certain classic cars. While boomers help sustain demand for such classic muscle cars and large displacement V8s, younger enthusiasts may gravitate more toward, well, the Toyota Supra, and that could reshape the desirability. Some classic cars and some models, including air-cooled Porsche 911s and Ferrari Halo cars, may continue to remain strong in their value. Now, despite the uncertainty, there are still efforts to protect them, including the quote-unquote Jay Leno Law, a proposal aimed at preserving the car culture by allowing certain classic cars to skip smog checks. EV and emissions will certainly rule part of that conversation, but the bigger question is whether the future generations will still see these cars as worth preserving. You know, and working part-time at a classic car restoration shop, folks, I see this all the time. We've got a customer in right now. He's got a 1958 Corvette, which is his father's. It's a beautiful red car with the white coves, and he has driven the car maybe 200 miles in the past couple years. It's now not running right. He's bringing it in, and now we're going to have to do a carburetor rebuild, a lot of other things to do. And the biggest problem is that you have to drive these old cars. And if you're not going to drive them, then they're going to deteriorate quickly. And then when you do want to drive them, you're going to have to spend, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to keep them back on the road. One of the things that we are seeing in the collector car hobby is what is called a resto rod. And that's when you have the looks of the Camaro, Mustang, Bronco, Blazer, etc. But it's also has a modern engine, modern braking system, suspension, and modern air conditioning, all those kind of things. But to convert a car to do that, you could literally spend more than the car is actually worth itself on the current marketplace. So we're seeing some of that as well. People saying, you know what, I want to drive dad's old Mustang, or I want to drive mom's old Camaro or dad's Bronco, but I want to put money into it so it'll be safe on the open road in comparison to some of the cars that have all those new braking systems and better quality ride and a better quality drive. So we'll see. The hope is that the new generation that are going to inherit these cars do have a love for them and will continue the collector car hobby. Headline reads, Fry had hoped to bring Kyle Busch to the Indy 500. Well, former IndyCar Series president Jay Fry and the late Kyle Busch had tried several ways to bring the NASCAR star and his name to the Indianapolis 500 as the second brother to attempt the double. Now, Kurt Busch made his run at doing the double in 2014 with Andretti Global, where the 2004 NASCAR champion piloted the number 26th Honda to 12th in qualifying and finished 6th in the race, and also was running well at the Charlotte 600, the Coke 600, until engine issues intervened. For Fry, who spent many years as a NASCAR team owner before moving to IndyCar, Kyle Busch was a friend and a direct connection to the IndyCar boss. Joe Gibbs, who was the racing team's owner and sponsored by M&M's, who ran the Kyle Busch Motorsports NASCAR Truck Series, saw a perfect opportunity to bring these two worlds together. Well, it all started around 2017-2018, Fry told Racer magazine, and it appeared that he was definitely a genuine interest to do this. So obviously, from my Cup days and my experience, I had known Kyle for a long time and his management and his team, and there was a lot of momentum to make this happen. Then one thing or another just happened, and it didn't, but we just kept trying. He wanted the number 51, which was his number for his truck team. That was the Rowdy thing, the Days of Thunder thing, and the Rowdy Burns. So we just kept holding the 51 for him every year. And it's funny, if you ask Fry's former assistant, Amanda Trotter, she kept a sheet and list of numbers for the 500, and it always said KB listed next to the number 51. Now, Fry said Bush continued to express interest in doing the Indy 500. I've been gone from IndyCar for a year or so, but until 2023, 2024, I was still getting texts from him. Said he's paying attention to what's going on. He was just a phenomenal guy, an incredible race car driver, and if there was anybody that could have won both races, it would have been him. Well, despite the ongoing attempts to get Rowdy into the largest single-day sporting event in the world, Fry laments the fact that it just didn't happen before Bush was suddenly taken at age 41. Sharing renderings of Bush's proposed M&M's-sponsored 51 IndyCar was kind of a surprise by Fry amid the sports grieving. There was general interest. Unfortunately, we just didn't get things worked out. And again, it was no one's fault. Just these things are complicated. He had an amazing focus, amazing car control, and he could do things in a race car that just most people can't. So, yeah, there was a lot of talk about trying to get this young man into the Indy 500, and the picture of the Indy car with the M&M's livery on it is just spectacular, and that would have been really, really fun to see Kyle Busch out on the track at the Indianapolis 500. The Detroit Grand Prix, well, Alex Palou once again dominates and comes through the field to win the Detroit Grand Prix, but there's a really good article about, well, Mr. Rahal. Rahal's run of third-place finishes continues at the Detroit podium. Well, eight races into the IndyCar season, Graham Rahal has had three podiums to his credit and all three third-place finishes, his strongest performance to start the championship in many years. The number 15 Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing Honda was quick through the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix weekend despite being hit and spun under braking by Ganassi's Kiffin Simpson, who was coming from a long way back. That sent him to the rear of the field, and Rahal was able to recover and shine. Quote, "We're getting there. We're really getting there," Rahal surmised. "I tried some stuff today. I ran some things on this car, some development set of dampers, a little different than the other boys, on purpose to take one for the team, good or bad, to see how the tire degradation would be and improve our street course package." Well, Rahal was complimented by his second-year teammate, Louis Foster, who drove the number 45 Honda. He said, quote, "It was great to see both cars up front. Real bummer for Mick, because honestly, he was in the catbird seat to have a great result," Rahal added. "I don't know if he got just a little too deep into the turns. But thanks to 3/3 in the last five races, Rahal holds 9th in the standings heading to this weekend at Worldwide Technology Raceway, which is just outside of St. Louis. So congrats to Graham Rahal for having 3 third-place finishes and being in 9th place, a great start for the veteran race car driver. Well, last weekend, NASCAR was in Nashville, and Denny Hamlin wins the race. That's his 62nd win of his career. It was a 1-2-3 finish for Chip Ganassi Racing, Joe Gibbs Racing, with Denny Hamlin winning the race, Christopher Bell finishing in 2nd, and in 3rd was Chase Briscoe, all driving for the famed coach. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. came in 4th, and a big, big finish for Shane Van Gisbergen. Shane is the driver who came up from the Australian Supercar Series, has been dominant on road courses in NASCAR, but this is his first oval top 5 finish, so congratulations to Shane Van Gisbergen for getting his first top 5 on an oval. Well, NASCAR is up in Michigan this weekend, and that race actually starts at noon today, and that's going to be on Prime streaming service, Amazon Prime. And Denny Hamlin on the pole. Carson Hocevar will be starting in 2nd. Tyler Reddick in 3rd. Ty Gibbs will start in 4th. And Chase is back-to-back. Chase Elliott and Chase Briscoe will be starting behind them. So we'll have those results for you next weekend. One of my favorite races. Love that big track. Really disappointed that I never got to see IndyCars run on that track, but the Michigan race is on today at noon on Prime. NASCAR is back on an oval this weekend, and they are running at Gateway, and that is going to be tonight at 6 p.m., and that is going to be on Fox 10. And Alex Palou continues his domination. He's going to be starting from the pole. David Malukas will start second. Kyle Kirkwood will start in third position, your reigning Indy 500 winner. Felix Rosenquist will start in fourth, and rounding out the top five will be Scott McLaughlin. So you have two of the top five going to be driving for Penske. And it's interesting to see how strong the Honda engines are, which is Alex Palou, Kyle Kirkwood, and Felix Rosenquist. So three of the top five starters are Hondas, and I'll have those results for you next weekend. Well, Formula One is happening, or happened today, and I'm still, I'll have those results for you next weekend because the race is still going on as I'm doing my show. So Kimi Antonelli started on the pole, Max Verstappen second, Lewis Hamilton started in third, Charles Leclerc in fourth, and Isaac Hajjad started in fifth. So crazy race so far. I don't want to tip my hat on what was going on, and I'll give you all those results next weekend from the Monaco Grand Prix for Formula One. Any news to announce? Ned Jarrett passed away this week. Ned Jarrett, two-time NASCAR Cup Series champion and former NASCAR broadcaster, has passed away. He was 93 years old. With profound sadness, the family of NASCAR Hall of Fame driver and TV radio personality Ned Jarrett announces his passing on Thursday, June 4th. He died peacefully of natural causes at his home in North Carolina with his family by his side. He was 93 years old. Our father was a devout Christian, a devout and loving family man, and he was a friend to everybody he met, and he was NASCAR's oldest living champion. Well, Ned Jarrett got his love of racing by seeing races at Hickory, North Carolina Speedway in his early days, and he claimed his first championships in 61 and 65. He won 50 races, which put him 13th on the list. In addition, he earned the nickname Gentleman Ned for his demeanor. The two-time champion was also the sporting division in 57 and 58, which is the precursor to the today's O'Reilly series. Upon retiring from driving, when Ford left NASCAR after winning his second title, he made a promise to his wife, a seamless transition into broadcasting. It was the Dale and Dale show as they came off turn four. And you know who I'm pulling for. And this is when he was doing the announcing for his son as he was in the booth when his son Dale Jarrett won the Daytona 500. Ned was an outstanding ambassador for our sport for more than six decades and will dearly be missed. On behalf of the France family and everybody at NASCAR, I offer my deepest condolences to Ned's family and the loss of a true NASCAR legend. Ned Jarrett was inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame in 2011. He was also named as one of NASCAR's top 50 drivers in 1998. Rest in peace, friend. Some gas prices with our friends over at AAA right now. The average gas price in the United States is $4.17. Arizona, our average gas price is $4.55. Our friends over in New Mexico, $4.06. Colorado, $4.17. Utah, $4.42. Nevada, $5.03. California, $5.90. As we move east, Texas, $3.64. Oklahoma, $3.66. Arkansas, $3.81. Louisiana, $3.74. And we head up to the Midwest, Illinois, $4.50. And in Indiana, $3.46. So gas prices all over the map, but here in Arizona, they seem to be trickling down just a little bit. I saw we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's talk about what's going on with our gas prices here in Arizona. Well, the cheapest gas, well, that's going to be in Littlefield, Arizona, and $3.62 at the TA Express. The Maverick station in that same city is going to be $3.79. But how about this? Sam's Club in Gilbert, $3.84 a gallon, and the Sam's Club in Tempe at $3.84 as well. So if you've got a Sam's Club card, that would be a great place to get some gas on down in Tempe and Gilbert. The Costco in Marana, $3.89. The Costco in Tucson at $3.89 as well. Let's take a look. The Costco in Gilbert, $3.89. So gas prices are making a big run down here locally. That's great news to hear. And Tucson, $3.89 at Sam's Club, and the Love's Travel Stop in Eloy at $3.99 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. We know some of it. Let's get the rest of the details. All right, well, we've already talked about the Sam's Clubs, and those are awesome, and we've got the Costco's coming in, the Arizona Avenue location in Gilbert, 399 on Market Street in Gilbert, the Walmart on Baseline at 405, the Quick Trip on Arizona Avenue in Gilbert at 406, and the Walmart fuel station on 35th Avenue at 408. I know when I was at Costco the other day, I paid $4.59 for premium, and regular was at $4.04. So gas prices, oh folks, this is looking better. Sneaking back under $4 a gallon, back into the threes. So let's go find some cheap gas. Time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, my 2011 turbocharged Volkswagen CC with the 2-liter engine has a rear bearing seal that is leaking oil. I'm being told by my mechanic it also is leaking air. He says that's causing computer problems, which illuminates the check engine light. Can you explain this to me? I've never heard a car leaking air. And that's from Donald. Yes, we normally associate leaking air from tires, but engines can have air leaks too. They're more commonly referred to as vacuum leaks. Now, when the pistons of your engine travel down, they suck in air, which is necessary for combustion. That creates vacuum. Over the years, car makers have cleverly employed vacuum to run all sorts of stuff. Things like power brakes, emission systems, parts of your turbocharger are vacuum operated. So if there's big enough air leak in the engine, well, air can leak out, and an oil leak, and it'll can cause that air leak. It also can cause problems with your turbocharger, which can directly affect your crankcase ventilation system. That system operates by vacuum and pulls combustion vapors out of the crankcase and then reintroduces them into the cylinders so they can be fully burned. If either one of those vacuum-related problems could cause your check engine light to come on. So what do you do about it? Well, the first thing you do is you fix the rear leaking seal, and that should fix both your oil leak and your vacuum leak. But it's a big job, as your mechanic has told you while rubbing his hands together and mentally checking off his next 6 boat payments. The rear bearing is at the back of the engine, so the transmission is going to have to come apart because you have to remove the transmission from the engine to put the seal in. And it's going to separate you from your bank account at about, $2,000. The tragedy is the parts themselves, they cost about $80. The rest is just labor. But when it's done and you intend to keep your car, so suck it up and your new likely repaired engine, the vacuum, will do the same thing. Yeah, it's amazing how much vacuum causes problems in cars and old classic cars as well. Sometimes we actually have to install a separate vacuum pump to help some of the performance cars operate properly. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.